And welcome back to the Cardboard Herald, my chance to talk with creative gamers and game creators. And joining me today is Andrew Russell Burkett of Atheris Games. Welcome back to the show, Andrew.
Thank you for having me again, Jack. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I asked you here. I feel like I'm summoning you now. I've asked you here for a very important reason, Andrew. I needed to talk to you about podcasting.
Awesome. I'm excited to talk about this.
So this is going to be a little bit of a weird episode for everyone at home, because it's not necessarily an interview, and half the people just shut off their iPad right now. They're like, Jack is going on a rant. What's going on is Andrew is on the precipice of starting a really exciting podcast venture, and he's also agreed to occasionally do some guest episodes for the Cardboard Herald. He's a notable fan and friend of the show. I mean, when was the first time that we talked? Was that like a year ago? More than a year ago?
It must have been more than a year ago, because we met at Dice Tower, and that, you know, the next one happened.
Yeah. I feel like you were a very early guest on the show. And now, even though I'm used to the beard that you wear on a regular basis, I'm still weirded out by your Skype icon being like this fresh-faced young boy. And at the time, I was shocked. Like, did someone actually like murder Andrew and some random guy is like opening up the Skype session here? Like, am I talking to the right guy? This is so very confusing.
So I do actually plan on changing that. So I have some local friends who saw my articles in Casual Game Insider, and they were like, whose picture did you use for this? And I was like, that's me. I'm like, no, that's not you. You don't even have long hair and a beard in this picture. And I was like, I put on my to-do list that very week, get a new bio photo for Casual Game Insider.
Totally. Well, the reason why Andrew is here is because he was like, yo, Jack, if I'm going to be doing some of this stuff, if I'm going to be helping out on the Cardboard Herald, and I'm wanting to do this other podcast venture, you think you can give me some hot tips, like some killer strats on podcasting, you know, like a podcasting 101 thing? And being the industrious / lazy person that I am, I was like, yes, of course. But can we make it an episode? Because that would fill up a weekly slot, which would be wonderful. And thus, here we are. So congratulations, audience. You're in Podcasting 101 with Andrew here.
Woohoo! I'm learning too.
We're all learning. So I guess, where does this adventure begin? Like, I think I asked you originally, hey man, you know, would you be interested in like the upcoming year of podcasting, because we were about to hit a milestone, or I guess we're even closer to that milestone of 2 years, if you'd be interested in doing some guest hosting. And right about that time, I want to say, you were talking about starting your own podcast. Were those things just like happened to be lined up, or what was going on there?
Yeah, literally, I think it was the same week. I was like talking to Cody Thompson from Gold Nugget Games about potentially starting a podcast. And then like the same week, he reached out to me about potentially guest hosting. And it was like, I should definitely buy a mic. It seems like I'm going to be on a podcast no matter what.
Yeah. Well, what's cool is that this seemed like a weird circumstance to me as well, because I had no idea that you knew Cody, and I was in the same circles as Cody, as being part of the board game internets, the Twitterverse. And I talked on a recent episode about how like supportive the board game Twitterverse has been. And while you've been involved, I definitely was seeing a lot more presence of Cody. And so I was like, wait, to Cody? Like, that's weird. I mean, I don't associate you two together for any reason. Like, how did you guys meet?
I'm new to the Twitterverse, I guess. I've always liked Twitter, and I was like, oh, this social media site seems interesting, but I never really used it personally. And then I wanted to like go heavy on the Atheris social media, and so I started like going on Twitter every single day, and I was like, whoa, okay, this community is actually really cool. I think it's a lot different, even though it's probably like 99% the same people. It's a lot more candid, and I think the issues talked about aren't always gaming related, but there's a lot more that goes on there than I see in the Facebook groups and other avenues like Reddit and all that kind of stuff. So I've enjoyed it. And so Cody and I kind of interacted in Facebook groups and on Twitter, kind of just going through and responding to each other's posts and stuff. And since we were both really active on social media, we met each other that way. And then somehow we started talking about podcasts, and we decided to do a few Skype calls. And after talking with each other, we're both around the same age, and I'm 23 and he's around the same age as me. And we have a lot of similar experiences, and he's just starting up as a board game publisher, and I've been doing it for only a few years. So I thought it would be interesting to kind of start a podcast with industry people that are just starting up and kind of going through the industry from a newcomer's kind of point of view.
Yeah. And also, you have a lot of experience with like Casual Game Insider. And I know that you've made tons of connections within the local scene there in Florida. And I know that when I met up with you at a convention, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm helping these guys out at their booth. And like everyone was shaking hands with everyone. Like it was, you knew seemingly like every fifth person at that convention, which was super cool for me. And you were introducing me to all these different people. But it made me aware that something that I think that you two could do is like an inside baseball podcast where you're talking about the real industry perspective, and it could be anything ranging from, you know, actually the financial aspect of things, or it could be getting into what are the metrics that companies are going for, you know, what are the goals, the disciplines that people do in order to keep themselves motivated, real tangible stuff that would be functional for a lot of people who are just trying to get their start, which is kind of different. Like I like hitting on that stuff on the Cardboard Herald, but oftentimes I'm much more focused on the creativity, the aspirations, the personal focus, and the history of someone, how they got to do what they're doing, not necessarily the real nuts and bolts of what they're doing. And so I think that could be a huge tool for people and a great angle to take it.
Yeah, I think that I've always tried to help other Kickstarter creators when they're starting out. And I know that a ton of people helped me when I started. And I thought that it could be sort of an avenue where I could, and maybe selfishly, like answer some of the questions that I get a lot, no matter what, anyways, and be like, oh, you have that question? Go listen to this podcast episode where I answer that.
Yeah, I think that is going to be a great platform for you guys. And you and Cody both are really cool people. You both have a ton of humility. You both are very personable, and you're both supportive in the community. So I think that's going to be awesome. So you have a name picked out at this point. It's Games to Glory, right?
Correct.
Why the name?
So I was trying to think of names that would kind of showcase the idea of like where startup companies that are trying to like gain a foothold in the industry. And so I was like, well, Glory has that feeling like we're trying to get there, we're trying to become victorious and get that glory at the end of the tunnel, even though we're, you know, starting up and don't necessarily have all the financial and other resources that some bigger companies have. So
it's inspirational, it's triumphant, I like it. So that's going to be on the horizon, and I'm sure that here on the Cardboard Herald, you're probably going to hear a lot about that, because I really like these guys, and I want to help support them. So for now, I would just keep tabs on Andrew and Atheris Games, and I think Games to Glory is already a functional domain that's redirecting to Atheris Games right now. Is that right?
It will be. So we hired a web developer that's fixing our current website, and is going to add that as well.
Rad. Okay. So you will hear about it in the audience, and we'll keep you posted, and you'll probably be hearing Andrew and Cody on this podcast in all sorts of different roles one way or another, because these guys are friends of the Cardboard Herald. And as I've talked about in the past, I want this to be a platform for them, for people who are awesome in this industry, to help give them a voice, which also helps the Cardboard Herald exist and perpetuate. So with that said, let's actually get to the kind of things I wanted to talk about. And I know you had some questions for me too, Andrew, but I wanted to catch everyone up. So the first lesson that I think that everyone here should pay attention to is something that Andrew already spoke to. It's being on Twitter. And you know, I've been a participant in gaming forums for ages. Like when I was like really big into Legend of the Five Rings tournament scene, I was, you know, moderating forums. I was in forums, and I've seen all sorts of different gaming forums and gaming platforms where there's healthy discussion, there's not so healthy discussion, that kind of stuff. Personally, for me, I tend to use Reddit as more of like a discussion forum, and then I use BoardGameGeek as the kind of hub of posting things, whether it's my own podcast, which, yes, podcasts have registries on BoardGameGeek, and you can tag those podcasts to all sorts of different things, like people who are involved, games that you talked about, so that way it has this kind of web to kind of catch new audience, especially people who are subscribing to all these different games, which again, that's a whole nother thing, is subscribing to games if you are wanting to pay attention to certain activity. So being good at BoardGameGeek is a huge thing, both as a creator and both as someone hungry for new content in the industry. But Twitter is where you make connections more than any place else. It has been where I've seen development of relationships and connections that are going to lead to interviews. They're going to lead to getting review copies of games. They're going to be ways in which you are going to interact with your peers. And it is an incredibly supportive community. And I know that is counter to everything that you've ever heard about Twitter in your lifetime, because everyone's like, it's a cesspool of scum and villainy. But that is not my experience in the board game community and Twitter. Like, I don't know, like, Andrew, have you ever had any sort of negative experience on Twitter? Like, be honest with me here.
I have not. I've seen other people have some vileness, which I think is kind of the nature of any social media, and just life in general, I guess. But I think for the most part, when I look at the board game industry Twitter, it seems that everyone's supportive. There's motivational posts all the time. There's people that will post like, oh, I'm down on my luck today, or today wasn't a good day, and then you'll see like 18 people comment like, oh, I hope you have a better day. And I love GIFs, so I kind of love that element of Twitter as well, that GIFs end up being posted like very frequently.
Yeah, like GIFs are a secondary method of communication on Twitter. First is language use, but really if you can nail it with a good GIF, then you're on top of things. Like I put a GIF of a bear in my backyard yesterday, and I was very happy about creating that. that was a whole nother thing. But the dangers of podcasting from Alaska are occasionally you'll have a bear in your backyard eating your crab apples. But
well, here in Florida, it would just be an alligator. So sort of the same thing.
Yeah. Alligators are the bears of Florida. I can get behind that. And all of a sudden, I want that on a t-shirt. Maybe someday if there are Cardboard Herald t-shirts, that will be somehow incorporated. It's perfect. We have merchandising options now, but we're not talking about merchandising. So the things that I would say in order to get you started on Twitter, like if you don't have a Twitter account, or maybe you do and you're not really using it, is I would follow a couple people in particular as a good start. So one, and these are all people who have been hugely supportive of me, and they've also been people who I really admire. They've been on the podcast. One is Emma Larkins, and Emma was on recently, and she does all sorts of game design daily stuff, and she is like a hub of social media on Twitter. And you'll learn a lot, not just about game design stuff, but also you'll learn about like how to interact with people and how to build communities on Twitter by really examining what Emma's doing. So Emma Larkins is one. The next person that I would say to follow would be Jackson Pope. And Jackson is over in England, and he does his whole Craft Wednesday thing. If you'll notice, these are like hashtag things that are building communities, and they have been very successful at building communities and utilizing Twitter in order to foster these relationships that grow beyond really the scope that they are specifically managing it. Like, it's now a thing on Twitter that there's this Craft Wednesday and people can join up, they can share their ideas, that kind of stuff. And again, it fosters relationships. And, you know, board games are still a niche thing. This is, for many people, their primary outlet for interacting with peers, and it's incredibly supportive. The third person that I would say to follow, of course, aside from Andrew and his Atheris Games account and his Atheris Andrew account, and then the Cardboard Herald account, and all of the people kind of surrounding on the TCBH Strike Force, the third person I would say is to follow Weird Giraffe Games, because Carla Kopp is someone who is taking maybe a different approach to Twitter in that she is very confessional about her her struggles and the challenges that she faces on a daily basis, whether it's actually her business challenges or very, very personal things. But she is also really, really good at celebrating successes of her own or other people. And I think she's another example of someone who utilizes social media in a real positive way to build community. So the first lesson that I have for you, and we haven't even gotten to the nuts and bolts of podcasting, which we will, but it is to look at Twitter and social media and look for people that really inspire you and examine what they're doing and find ways of actually participating in the sub-communities that they've created, whichever ones best apply to you. I don't know. Are there any people that are like super important for you that you want to shout out to, Andrew, that you think would be good to follow in this regard?
No, I think you've hit on a lot of the people I follow. There's a ton of people in the Twitterverse that I'll interact with on a regular basis, and I will likely blank on all of them right now. so the ones you mentioned are all people I follow. Emma's episode on the Cardboard Herald was awesome, by the way. She seems super cool.
Yeah, she is super cool. Like, I was shocked that I didn't have her on earlier, and now I just want to have her on again. She's a real cool person to talk to and real genuine, and I really enjoyed that. Sometimes I get episodes where people are more PR focused, if you know what I mean, and she came across as someone who just genuinely wanted to have a conversation and wanted to talk about the stuff that she was interested in and wasn't afraid to talk about the challenges that she's faced. So that was really cool. Now, the next thing that you and I already started talking about was microphones. So that was where we really started going down this rabbit hole of the guru talking to you about starting a podcast, is you asked me what kind of microphone to get. Did you get that microphone?
I did.
Okay, so you have a Yeti Blue microphone, or rather the company is Blue and the microphone model is a Yeti. This is kind of like an industry standard, and you got the Blue and Black model, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I got that sucker too right in front of me. That was my favorite color. Initially, I had one of the old silver models when they only made the silver models, and now they make all kinds of different colors. You find them for deals on Amazon, particularly around Thanksgiving and holidays and that kind of stuff. Sometimes you can scoop them up for like $100. Sometimes you can get like refurbished models, but these are really good microphones. Did you buy yours new or refurbished?
I got a refurbished one on Amazon, and it was $110 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's sounding great. You're using it right now, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I feel like I have to use it all the time now. I'm excited about it. It's really significantly better than the microphones I've used in the past. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually feels like you're a pro. Which, speaking of which, I don't think that you need to get the Yeti Pro, which is out there, and it costs a lot more. And here's why. The main feature of that is it has an XLR output. And that is like the traditional microphone cable that if you were in a rock band, and let's say you had a Shure SM58 microphone, the greatest rock and roll microphone that's ever existed, it does not have an on and off switch, which is a big part of the appeal. It will survive any sort of beatings that you can take or make with it. It is an awesome microphone. And the only thing it has, no on off switch, nothing, is just the plug for the XLR. If you are doing real high-end professional stuff, then I might recommend, well, I mean, if you're doing real high-end professional stuff, you're probably going well beyond Blue and their whole microphone line. But, you know, if you're doing something more than podcasting and you're actually recording music that you're selling, that kind of thing, you might want the Blue professional microphone. But if you're just starting out, don't jump to that. I have the standard right now, which just has a USB out. It's really convenient. It's plug and play. You don't have to worry about the interface and having to have a mixer and all that kind of stuff. And if you don't have that equipment or don't even know what I'm talking about when I say a mixer, then clearly going the XLR route is not going to be for you. The Pro does have USB as well, but it's still going to be like an extra $100. You know, don't break the bank on something that you're probably not going to need for the first 5 years that you're doing it. So that the reason why the Yeti is kind of my favorite and also a standard for a lot of people is that it's an omnidirectional microphone. Did you play around with the settings at all?
Yeah, I tested all the different things. I saw that there's an interview mode where it only pick up the front and back, and there's the omnidirectional where it picks up on the sides as well, and then the one cardioid, I guess, is the main one that you use for podcasting that just picks up the front of the microphone.
Right. Yeah. So from the outside, the microphone just looks like a standard microphone. It's got a black mesh head on it, and it's got a almost like capsule looking body. But within the head are three microphones, and you have different settings that can be used so that people can talk to the front and back of the microphone in more of an interview setting. And there's also the omnidirectional one if you want to put it in the middle of a room and like people are playing music, that kind of stuff. Or the standard setting, which Andrew and I are both using right now, where we're just talking to the microphone. And we just had a conversation about this right before we started recording. What did I talk to you about, Andrew? Why don't you walk people through what I was saying? And you have yet to hear the fruits of those labors, but I promise you there's a magical difference that you'll hear later.
I am sure you're correct. So when Jack and I were talking before, you know, we went live, I was kind of sitting further back.
Why don't you try sitting like you were before?
So I guess I'll be back like this far. I was a few feet away from the mic, and then so he mentioned that getting closer to the mic that my audio would be significantly better. And so speaking directly into the mic and at the correct level for whatever the gain is important.
Yeah. And this is another tip that I have for people is that when you're talking on a microphone, it's not about necessarily the expense of the equipment. Once you get to a solid point, which I think the Blue Yeti is a good solid point to start on, you know, it's not cheap. Someone's going to have to spend a little bit more. It's not some crappy like $15 microphone or something. But if you're able to get to this level, the best thing that you can do for audio before you start like putting mattresses on your wall, before you start like trying to soundproof everything, before you start getting really fancy mic stands, which I have like a fancy mic stand that is a boom stand that can go in front of me. I'm not even using it right now because I needed to move my microphone around my room. It's just on its like table stand right now that comes with it in the box. It is talking directly into that microphone. I mean, I could be closer like this. I have no idea how that's sounding. That's probably too close, but I say about 6 inches away from your microphone is going to have a lot better audio. And as you probably heard earlier, this is me at a distance of what probably Andrew was at earlier, and you start getting a lot more room noise into it that you don't necessarily get when you're up close to the microphone, and you have a lot more control over your voice and control over what kind of levels you have, and you're just not getting that super unpleasant, echoey bathroom sound, which you hear all the time on podcasts because people are talking to mics that are a couple feet away from them or even a foot away from them.
The other thing I read, I was looking into the mic a little bit after I bought it, and people would say that people will turn it and try to speak at towards the top of the mic, and since it's an omnidirectional mic, it actually wants you to talk with it straight up. You don't want to turn it to go to the top of the
mic. Right. Yeah, unlike that traditional microphone where you'll see singers angle the mic as if it were an ice cream cone that they were about to take a bite of the top of, instead you want it to be something that is almost like another person where it's running parallel to you and you're talking directly into it, and that gives you a lot clearer sound. Could you hear a difference when I was away from the microphone? Like, did it sound any more echoey or anything?
Yes, significant difference.
Yeah. So that's what we were getting earlier, and so being close to your microphone, that's going to be a big difference. So that's just kind of like some equipment stuff and getting established, that kind of thing. The other thing that is going to be really important is like an ability to record and having the tools to do that and the tools to edit. So you asked me earlier, Andrew, if you were going to need to record your end of the conversation and if I could record both ends of the conversation. I can, which I typically do for the Cardboard Herald. I have a program that's called Ecamm Tools Skype Recorder, and it's like a plugin. I want to say it's like $15, and it allows you to record everything that's local as well as everything that Skype feeds you. What that means is that you can record video of the conversation. I typically don't, unless I am working on a specific project. And also video requires a lot of resources for your internet, so it can get a little hinky. If you are talking to someone who doesn't have great internet, but you know, if you need to do some video recording, that's a great way of doing it. But you can also set it to record just audio. The disadvantages of this are that if Skype is not picking up good audio or the internet kind of sucks, then you're only going to get your crystal clear voice and then everything that's kind of sketchy coming from them through Skype. And furthermore, you're only going to get one channel for the other person on the end. And if you're doing something like TCBH Hangouts, our group interview show that we do monthly, then everyone who is not you recording, they're just going to be all on one solid audio track, which makes it more difficult to edit if you want to do some more precision editing. For one-on-one, Ecamm Movie Tools is incredible. I love the thing. What are you using to record the audio on your end?
I typically use Audacity. That's what someone else told me to use. So
yeah, and Audacity is free, I think, right?
Yeah,
I still have it.
I believe it's free. I don't remember paying for it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, Audacity is free. I do not really like the interface of Audacity. Like, I've used a lot of audio editing programs for music and for podcasting now. My preference is to use GarageBand. I really like GarageBand. I'm a Mac guy. As far as TCBH Studios is run by Apple equipment, but the GarageBand is a really convenient tool, and it's something that I'm used to. You can use Audacity, and there's lots of people who do that. It has the capabilities of doing what most other audio programs have the capabilities of doing, at least for your basic podcasting needs. But whatever program that you use, become familiar with it. Learn things like how to break up audio into separate tracks, how to increase or decrease gain, how to compress, how to have multiple tracks going at one time. spend some time fiddling around. And if you aren't really figuring it out, then maybe consider getting either a producer, someone who's willing to help out on the production end of things, or do some research. Find someone who knows how to do these things. There's all kinds of YouTube communities that are like, hey, we're just going to have miniature lessons on how to use this program to do this or to do that. And you just spend some time looking at one once a week or twice a week and learn a new technique, and you will find yourself getting better. And as you become more fluent in whatever program that you're using, the things that you don't know will all of a sudden become more intuitive. And I think that's going to be a huge aspect to any sort of audio design that you're going to work on, especially podcasts. Have you given any thought to editing or how you want to approach that stuff? Do you have any experience doing any editing, Andrew?
Not really. I did a few videos. Every once in a while I would do videos because I did photography for a while.
Uh-huh.
So I did photo editing, but not really audio editing too much. So I think I'm going to rely heavily on Cody for that one.
Okay. Does he have experience with it?
Hopefully. We'll see. I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't asked him. He said he could do it.
Okay.
I just don't know what experience that is.
Well, we can have some more in-depth interviews where we're getting into the nuts and bolts. Maybe I can break this out into its own series. I should say that if the audience, because this is a very weird episode, is interested in more of this stuff, the educational aspect of things is something that I enjoy. Clearly, I don't have a script right now, but I'm continuing to deliver high octane information as I see fit here, because I loved training at work. That's like one of my favorite things, is training new employees or groups of employees or groups of families who are learning something new that interacts with the social services stuff that I'm doing. I like group settings and trainings for adult learners and that kind of stuff. And so if you like this, I don't know. Maybe that could be a whole nother Cardboard Herald thing. I'm still working on the video series where I'm doing educational things in relation to creative projects with board games, but that's waiting on a certain Patreon goal. So if I get to 20, then I'm going to go ahead and start doing a video series where I'm teaching people how to make inserts for their games, or how to make dice bags for their games, or all kinds of different cool stuff. I have one of those episodes as a pilot, which you can find on our YouTube channel. But anyway, back to our podcasting lesson. So we've talked about audio editing, and the one other thing that I wanted to mention here is that, to be honest, there have been different depths in which I've delved with audio editing with the Cardboard Herald, and that when I first started, I was really concerned with editing and concerned with sounding really smart on the podcast. And I realized that that would make me a little bit less authentic because everything felt a little bit rehearsed and I was nervous. And so I would record things several times. I would edit a lot. And I would take out any sorts of ums and uhs and big spaces in what I'm saying, because if you've listened to me for any length of time, you know that there are times where I'll just kind of stop in the middle of a sentence and then pick up. I don't know. It's a weird tic that I never noticed until I started recording myself. And that's another thing that you'll have to learn, is that when you record and you edit yourself, you're going to start hating the way that you speak. But you know, deal with it. Now, the editing thing that I wanted to get to is that you're going to have to find the right balance for yourself. And I think that it is too laborious to edit out all of the stuff that isn't necessarily working for you. The best thing that I can compare it to is live music. If you don't have the ability to play well live, even decently, passably live, and you listen to a live recording of yourself and you're like, oh, this sounds really bad. Maybe I'll re-record guitar on top of this. It won't be live, but you know, I can manage it. You know, if you're fixing all those things in post, then maybe instead of focusing all your time, energy, and effort on editing, maybe instead what you should be focusing on is how to make the core product good. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying The Cardboard Herald is flawless and couldn't use more editing, because editing is really awesome as a tool to keep things really tight. But if you can't have a conversation with someone where you can't listen to it afterwards and feel like there's at least some underlying element of this that is good, then I would focus less on the editing side of things and more on the manufacturing of great audio that you would personally want to hear. The best way that I can put this is that when you are recording something, let's say it takes an hour. Let's say this podcast is an hour by the time we're done. And if you're editing more than an hour, that seems somewhat reasonable to be in the hour, hour and a half range editing per episode in order to make it flow. Maybe a certain question didn't work out right, that kind of stuff. But if you are editing for like 2.5 hours, in order to get the conversation that you wanted out of an hour, and it's something that you are repeating on a weekly basis, you're doing it in your spare time on top of a full-time job or something, then it's going to eat up all of your life and it's going to make you a nervous wreck. From my experience, it is going to make you a nervous wreck. If you are precision editing to that degree where you're cutting out little uhs, you're cutting out little ums and breaths, and you're shaping everything pristinely together, then it's not going to be a sustainable venture at that point. I don't know. Like, is any of this making sense to you, Andrew? Like, what I'm talking about with the editing thing here, from an outsider's perspective, like, what are your thoughts on what I'm putting down?
I agree a lot. So I think that, like I said, I used to do photography, and there's definitely like okay-ish pictures that you can make look pretty with editing. But for the most part, if the original picture is not good, then it doesn't make sense to try to edit it and make it look nice.
Yeah.
And I think this the same obviously is true of audio and anything, is getting the original thing good and fixing. Like, I just started doing photography again, and I'm kind of like experimenting with different things. And so I posted on Board Game Geek, and I intentionally exposed a photo and overexposed another photo, and kind of just got it to the point where one was super dark because it was for Villainous, and they were like, oh, you need to figure out exposure. And someone mentioned this kind of idea of like, well, maybe he should learn how to do it in the camera instead of just telling him he can edit it in software, because if he does it in the software, then, you know, he'll just keep making the same mistakes on the camera and keep having to edit, and then you spend so much time editing when you could have taken an hour or whatever to fix the original problem and never had to do all that editing for, you know, years or whatever.
Totally. Well, the flip side of this, which is really important and was a very important thing that I wanted to say for any content creator out there, is that for any creative endeavor, you don't have to be good out the gate. I promise you, I'm not naturally talented at most things that I start. In fact, people probably listen to this and are like, oh, I don't know if he thinks he's talented now. But like, the thing is that what's the Macklemore lyric? I can't believe I'm quoting Macklemore here. The greats aren't great because they were great. The greats are great because they paint a lot. And that's to say that you have to put in the time. You know, if you record your first podcast and it didn't sound really great to start with, that's okay. Find something that you feel like was at least a success in that, like a partial success, and then find something that you would like to fix in it, and then employ that, or at least try to, in your next episode, and then try again and again. And there's going to be times where even after doing it 93 times, you're still like, oh man, I really flubbed that, or I could have done that a lot better. But you still are in the mentality of, I'm going to apply this to all future things. You're going to learn lessons. You're going to have grit and resilience and approach it again and again and again. And there will be measurable differences in how the end product comes out. If you have an expectation that you're going to have like this wonderful, awesome thing to start with, whether it's music or poetry or you know, it's debate or, you know, maybe designing a board game or recording a podcast, you know, if you're naturally that good that it comes out great your first time, wow, that's amazing. Congratulations. Yeah. But it's probably not going to be the case. And the people who never succeed are the people who get about halfway through and say, you know what, it's not even worth trying. And the people who do keep on trying, some of them, it still won't work out. You won't have a growing audience. You won't have a growing, you know, board game portfolio that you can pitch to developers and publishers and that kind of stuff. But you at least can try. And if you feel yourself growing after a few times and you feel like your skills are improving, then that's something that you can really lean into and, you know, calculate for yourself how much effort you want to put into growing something. And I think that's true of pretty much any creative endeavor out there. The most important skill is the resilience and grit that you bring with you and being able to take constructive feedback in order to take the really mean feedback that you might get and to still continue doing it because it's something that you're passionate and care about and focus on what can I do better in order to have the thing that I want. That's not to say you have to make a podcast that sounds like everyone else. That's not to say that you have to compromise the core artistic vision that you had, but focus on what you want it to be and what it isn't right now, and then think about what's one or two little things that I can do to improve upon this the next time I try.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I know not everyone's as talented as you, Andrew, to make like the world's most beloved board game the first time you ever tried designing something.
Oh, I wish. I think the first few games I made were so bad. I think some of them still are. I made a game the other day that was just awful, and you run into that stuff as in any creative endeavor where I think some of the games I make are really cool and some of them are just the worst thing ever and I would never want to play them. And so you go through that and you learn and you develop and grow, and like you said, like any creative endeavor, that first step is really just trying and realizing it's not always going to be perfect the first time and just keep on going and never stop going after if that's something you want to do.
Right. So with Games to Glory, what are you going to do for web hosting? Like what was your plan? Do you know anything about getting someone onto iTunes or getting, you know, podcast RSS feeds set up, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely zero. I have okay. No idea how to do that.
Well, I don't know all too much myself other than the Google searches that I've done, but I can say from what I've done, I can tell everyone out there. So I listened to a ton of podcasts before I started this podcast. So obviously when I was looking at hosting something or having even a website to host my own reviews, I went to Squarespace because I was like, oh, I can put in a WTF offer code, or I can put in a my brother and me offer code or something, or Giant Bomb. You know, I could put those in here, get a discount, and then just have something. And I, in retrospect, wish that with what I was doing that I had just started writing reviews on BoardGameGeek rather than jumping straight into having my own site. But for me personally, I think the way that I did it is probably what has allowed me to become successful, in that investing a little bit of money, you know, it's something that came out to, I don't know, it was probably like $6 a month or something, with offer codes. I don't know exactly. Somewhere between like $60 to $100 is what Squarespace costs me a year. But putting some money into it to say, this is something that I could write off if it's a complete disaster and I fail, you know, it's not like I'm investing my life savings into it. But at the same time, it's enough money that I would feel very guilty if I didn't utilize it for something. And I think that was a motivating factor for me. But with Squarespace, you can set up an RSS feed, and there are tons of tools within Squarespace itself on how to establish an RSS feed, how to link your Squarespace account to iTunes in order to get it available on iTunes so people can subscribe to the podcast. It's been working out for me pretty well. I know that I'm thinking about at this point maybe growing to something else, because accessing old episodes gets a little hinky on Squarespace. And if you're listening to this and you're like a pro at this stuff, let me know if you have any experience with this. But the RSS pull from older episodes can be a little bit difficult, where sometimes it'll time out or it's not able to download an episode, that kind of thing. But so far as hosting new episodes and having my entire library up, it's been a really convenient tool. It's been really user-friendly. I don't think it's the most dynamic thing, but as far as all of the cardboard-held stuff, it is up on Squarespace, and that allows me to put it onto iTunes, onto Stitcher, and onto Google Play. All three of those you have to apply for. You can go to iTunes's website, to Stitcher's website, to Google Play's website, and you actually send them the link to your RSS feed, which is the way that podcasts are subscribed to, and they will approve you. I don't think it takes much to get approval, but you do have to apply to them. You don't have to pay anything to these three companies, and they are going to be the three main platforms in which people are going to access your stuff. And you'll want to do that fairly early, within the first couple of episodes. You'll need some sort of icon for artwork, but knowing nothing about starting a podcast, being able to Google those things, like how to get a podcast on iTunes, how to connect my Squarespace account to iTunes, that all worked really well. As long as you have a website and you have a way of creating pages on that website that, or a page that has RSS blocks, then I think you're probably good to go. I don't know anything about the Theris Games website, but I imagine you have everything that you need in order to host the podcast if you're paying for like the domain and hosting and all that kind of stuff on your end.
Yeah, so like I said, I kind of am slightly rebranding the company. So Theris Games is going to be... Atheris Games is still a thing, but Atheris Entertainment is like the parent company I'm making now, so that I can publish my books through the same like Kickstarter account and stuff. And so I'm doing like two sub companies, Atheris Games and Atheris Publishing, for my book stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know we talked about like your journaling and book ideas and that kind of stuff on the last time that you were on, back when you were on the podcast we recorded in Florida. So that's cool that this is one step closer to the fruition of that. The multimedia empire of Andrew Burkett.
That's the plan. I've told you before, I kind of have always been into writing, and I really wanted to make it a thing. And like you kind of mentioned with Squarespace, I knew that if I put money towards it, that it would help it come to fruition a little bit quicker. So I'm making like a sub brand thing, the Storytelling Soapbox, where I'm just like posting some of my personal stories. So I don't have that website up yet, but I created a Facebook page, and I'm writing a lot of short stories now to put on there. And then eventually, hopefully, publishing one of my books through Kickstarter.
Sweet. I can't wait to read it. That's going to be really cool. In fact, you should come back on the podcast when it's on Kickstarter so we can talk about your book, whether it's board game related or not.
It will likely not be, but
good. I want to hear it.
I tend to write in the psychology and serial killer realm. I don't know. I've always been fascinated with that. And so most of my books, well, even if they...
So I lost you, Andrew. I don't know if you can hear me, but I lost you. And this is an element of podcasting. This is something that I would normally edit out, but I'll actually keep going because this is actually helpful for people to hear. So I use Skype. You can also use Google Hangouts, but in some cases, you will have people drop the conversation.
Not sure.
So I'm back to recording. We'll pick it up where you just said it likely won't be. And we'll save the book conversation. I actually recorded a little bit about where we the dangers of Skype dropping calls and that kind of stuff, which I might leave in. But in interest of time, how about we get to some of the questions that you had for me? And if there are further questions that the audience has, like beyond this, maybe you and I can do another episode of this in the future. I might not make it another full episode of the Cardboard Herald, or maybe I will. I don't know. But like, go ahead and shoot. What are some questions you have for me about podcasting?
So one of them was just, I know you had done stuff with musical background, and so I wondered how helpful that's been with finding audio for like the intro of your podcast, and if you might have any resources that you found through your musical background that would be useful for finding audio for our podcast intro.
That is a really great question. So for the audio for the Cardboard Herald, that's actually a track that I put together. I use loops within GarageBand, but it's still a track that I composed. And the same thing for our TCBH reviews, our video channel music, and then for TCBH Hangouts, the reason why it sounds so much better than anything else that we have is like a legit produced musician did the theme track for that. It was provided by a guest we had on the show. He goes by Cheap, but the publishing company is Cheap Beats, is the music publisher record company. I'm losing the name of it right now, like what this thing is. But anyway, Cheap was on the show really early. He's in Japan. He does awesome chiptunes music and produces it. And he's also a publisher and a musician himself. But I asked him, like, hey, dude, can I occasionally use some of the music from Cheap Beats as like outro music on the podcast, which he let me use like the entire library. And then I would credit the artists. And then I asked him, hey, do you have anyone that you're working with that would be really cool for making a song for TCBH Hangouts? And I'd be willing to pay for it. But then it would be my song to freely use at that point. And he was like, no, I gotcha, man. I have the perfect person for it. It's going to be free. He'll make like three tracks for you. You can pick one of them, give any sort of feedback that you have, and then we'll work around it. And he connected me with The Dead. And The Dead made like this awesome banger that is the introduction to that podcast. So yes and no, it has helped me in the sense that I was able to make a song for the podcast. As far as additional resources, the thing that I would recommend is to look for either music that is royalty-free online. There's a lot of free royalty-free music. To find a musician friend or even a musician community or some sort of music publisher online that can make theme music for you that either you can pay for or use as long as you give the person credit. There are tons of resources as long as you start Googling away. And I'll put links in the show notes to Cheap Beats. I don't know if Cheap wants to go ahead and start farming music out to every podcaster out there, but he's got a huge library of stuff and some really, really cool stuff that kind of fits this wheelhouse of nerdy pop culture that may be accessible, but I don't know. I lucked out and I was able to make something. I don't know. Ask me. If someone out there wants a podcast theme and they're okay with like the level of music that I have for the introduction to the show, then, you know, I don't know. Ask me. Or Rob Conley of Ginger Cat Productions. Of course, I should have started with him. He's a musician. He's much better at digital music than me, and he is probably going to be able to put something together for you. He might charge you for it, or he might give it to you for free. I don't know, but reach out to him. He's part of the crew here on the Cardboard Herald and did a bunch of production stuff for me, but he's really good at that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, we talked on the first episode of the Hangouts.
Yeah, you were on it. You were there.
I was there.
Yep. Okay, so what's next?
So you answered 99% of my questions, so I only have one other one. Uh-huh. And that is, what do you think the most difficult thing that you've encountered, like, starting a podcast? Is it the consistency of posting regularly, or what is that?
Yeah, so I would say the most difficult thing that I have encountered is, like, if I'm being super honest and raw here, it's getting out of my head and being consistent on a regular basis. So oftentimes when I'm recording a podcast, and I've gotten better at this. This is one of those things where I listen to old podcasts and then I go, like, I need to get better on to bring this back to that conversation, is that I find myself thinking about the finished product before I'm at that point, and that takes me out of the conversation with the person that I should be having a conversation with. So, you know, that could mean that someone gives me an answer that I wasn't necessarily thinking about, and then I start thinking about, how am I going to edit this? Or, you know, is this going to be a good episode? Or, you know, how should I follow up and think about the next question, instead of really being present and in the moment and reactive to a person? And that gets compounded with the anxiety of needing to have something out on a weekly basis. Like, if I were to start the Cardboard Herald all over again and I had the audience that I have right now, I would probably move to bi-weekly episodes and try to have them much more professionally done, rather than the need to have something weekly. That's not to say that I don't enjoy what I do or what I've created, but the amount of time that it takes and the amount of effort and energy in publishing all of this while expanding into creative endeavors that are honestly much closer to what I originally wanted out of the Cardboard Herald. Like, I am so blessed and so fortunate in order to talk to all these people and make these relationships and to, like, talk with you, Andrew, honestly. But the hardest thing is being able to keep up and to feel like I'm really enjoying the conversations that I'm having, and to feel present in the moment and not think about the larger entity and the expectations of the Cardboard Herald and what I'm supposed to do in order to grow it, while I'm in the middle of doing the stuff that I really like, whether that's having conversations with people that are really creative, awesome people, or it's in the middle of filming a review, or it's in the middle of writing something. The best thing that I can do is to try and forget all of the surrounding elements about what next week is going to look like, what it's going to be like to publish it, because the end product is better if I can just focus on being present right here, right now. And that's something I've really struggled with. And I think I'm getting better, and I'm also looking for tools and resources in order to help me get better, whether it's relying on, like, family for emotional support, or it's being able to keep things in perspective, or it's reaching out to friends to say, you know, like, hey, I really respect the articles you write, the games you publish, and the presence you have online. How would you like to occasionally guest host the Cardboard Herald, so that way I can have something in the bank that I can slip in and keep the presence and focus that I want without having all of the stressors? So that's probably the most difficult thing at this point.
That makes a lot of sense. I would probably be the same exact way. I think end product, I think way too soon, even with a lot of our board game stuff. So
right.
I'll probably have the same exact issue.
Right.
I think that's all the questions I had for you. I appreciate how awesome you are and that you're always willing to help me. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Well, I wish that there were more opportunity to talk about some of your stuff, but you know, why don't we get like a nutshell? Atheris Entertainment, you are working on books and they are going to be kickstarted. What about the games? You have like some Mars focused Rondell game coming out, right?
Yep. So Ruins of Mars is my predominant focus right now. So tomorrow I'm driving to Claremont, which is like an hour away from me, to play test with the game designer a potential new variant that kind of reduces the complexity a little bit, and we'll speed the game up. So there might be like two versions, a easy and advanced version kind of deal. So I'm excited. It's a Rondell and it's Martian themed and the artwork's really beautiful. So I think it's going to do well. So that's a good one. And then we signed a game recently, which is a like white elephant gift exchange game from a local designer, Mike Mihilsek. So between that and Don Riddle's Ruins of Mars, those are the two games that are really on the forefront. And then we licensed a game, Oni, a while ago from the designer, Sebastian Kosner, who did Mutant Crops. And so we started working on development of that again. So that's in the pipeline as well. So
cool. You got a lot of projects going on. You got books, you've got games, and now you got a podcast on the horizon. Do you have any idea of when people should expect Games to Glory coming out or just kind of look for it on the horizon?
Well, it will kind of depend on the web development timeline and when Cody and I can start recording. We're going to try to record a few like pilot episodes that we plan to never release, but kind of learn the process, you know, get good, the junk out of the way. So I'm thinking probably in like 2 to 3 months. So,
all right. Well, again, for everyone in the audience, you're going to hear Andrew coming up here soon as a occasional guest host on the Cardboard Herald. Andrew has a way different perspective than me, and he's someone that I have a huge amount of respect for as an entrepreneur, as a person, as a creative identity, and as a friend. So I couldn't feel better about someone taking over. I had like some weird hiccup cough gas burp thing happened all of a sudden at once. That occasionally happens. That's a good moment to edit, but maybe I should actually leave that in so people hear what it is they're supposed to edit. I don't know, but anyway,
maybe it might be good. We had you walking further away from the mic, so
yeah, you know, so you get little things. But there are so many other things that I would be happy to talk about. So if this is helpful to anyone, then send in some questions, you know, cardboardherald@gmail.com. You can hit the contact link at the top. You can reach out to Andrew or to myself. And the bottom line is I think more voices is good. I feel like there are a lot of people who have a lot to add to the conversation, but the technical aspect might seem scary or it might seem like it's really difficult to break into. And I think that it really isn't. So if you want to hear another episode of this, or maybe you just want a quick question answered, then feel free to reach out to us and we'll have something in the pipeline. If I get a good enough response, Andrew and I'll do a take two and we'll do audience questions on anything that has to do with Atheris Games or podcasting or the Cardboard Herald, any of it, because this is stuff that I really like. The last thing I can say is, you know, if there's any creative project that you have ever wanted to do, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't just give it a chance. I'm not saying it's going to be successful. I'm not going to say you're going to naturally be good at it. I'm not going to say that it's not going to take a lot of work, but at least try to take the first little baby steps. And, you know, you never know what'll happen. You might be making friends with someone an entire country away talking about podcasting like 95 episodes later. So that's all I have to say for now. Thanks for coming on the show, Andrew. It's been a pleasure to have you on once again.
Been great being on. I'm looking forward to hosting a few episodes.
Yeah, totally. All right, man. Well, thanks everyone for listening. I've been Jack and he's been Andrew for the Cardboard Herald. thank you for listening to the Cardboard Herald. As always, everything we do is ad-free and audience-supported. If you'd like to help keep it that way, find the Patreon link at the top of our webpage, cardboardherald.com. We have several levels of support with various rewards. If you enjoyed the show, we do a whole bunch of other stuff, including reviews, interviews, and recommendations across writing, podcasts, and video. You can find that on our YouTube channel or by visiting any of our social media or our website. So with that out of the way, thank you again for listening to the Cardboard Herald.